the question over here then is, why did Rav, you know, drink it even though his son didn't drink, right? So, it says, okay. So, Ella Rav Sovari says, he was, first of all, right. He thought that it was because Bishop Yaluya, that maybe, you know, it had been uncovered. But even so, the Azul Maroro de Kashuso, the Kalalei Zihare, right? And the bitterness, the Marura, the Kashusa is the hops that they use in the
beer.
In the beer, right? So it would spoil the poison of the snake, right? With the Loki Malkitve, right? And as a matter of fact, you know, if you were sick, then you would be even sicker. Okay?
Yeah.
The Chia Bari, and my son Bria, hoil the Loki, the Loy Nishne Bide. Inasmuch as he was sick, he refused to drink it. So, in other words, it wasn't because, you know, he felt that it was prohibited, whereas his father felt it was permitted, but rather it was because of a special circumstance, so maybe they were sick, and they did not want to get any sicker. Okay? Omar Shmuel, now it comes to a new thing. Shmuel said, Kol HaShmotzim Yishlem Eris, says, all creeping creatures, they also have poison with it. However, Shel Nochosh Mamis, if it is the poison of a snake, then in that case, it can be fatal. But Shel Shrotzim, if it is of other creeping creatures, Eidu Mamis, it's not fatal. Obale Shmuel Chia Bar Rav, so Shmuel said to Chia, the son of Rav, Bararia, says to him. In other words, great scholar, he says, Tov Yemen Ochom Nilsam Ayiso Dahavu Amar Rav Abu. I want to tell you something, a great vault, a good vault, you know, that your father Rav said, Pochim Abu, this is what your father said. He says, Hani Armai Zukani, the Havashosi Yeluyu, the Lord Mason. He says, you know, those Arameans, right, who are Zukani, he says, they're so swollen up with fat and everything else because, you know, they eat all kinds of chazarai. So he says, they could drink uncovered liquid and they're not going to die. Either the Achlish Gots of Mosim covered with fire, because it's for the reason that they eat all kinds of Shkotsim and Mosim, in other words, all kinds of creeping creatures and the Chazarai and so on and so forth. So it makes them
they
build up an immunity.
That's an interesting word, Shkotsim.
Yeah.
Now that word means
Shkotsim really means creeping creatures or anything, no. Shkotsim really means Shkotsim. Shkotsim means things that you despise.
Okay, so I'm thinking like they
despise things. Yeah.
Several, more than one shaded are Shkotsim.
Well, that's correct.
It's the same word.
Yes, right. Yeah, well, Shkotsim are the creepy creatures.
So
but Shkotsim.
Is that the plural of Shkotsim?
No. Plural of sherets is shrotzim. This is the plural of the word sheketz. Sheketz, which means an abomination. So shrotzim means abominations.
Sherets are special.
Yeah, right. So it means foods, you know, foods which are abominations and creeping creatures, literally. Okay?
Yeah, sure.
So the abomination is the same, and shrotzim.
Yeah. Right.
There's the word is shrotzim, not shrotzim.
Shrotzim.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I have in my text either the achle shrotzim or a bosom. You see that?
Do you have it?
Yeah.
Second line from the bottom.
I did the alphabet. Shkotim.
Shkotim. Shkotim. Right. Shkotim Berabosim. Right. Shkotim. Okay. Shkotim means things which are an abomination. Foods which are an abomination. Mosim means, you know, like lobsters, shellfish, etc., etc.
Red tide.
Shrotzim really refers to things like, for example, lizards, frogs, and so on. Those are shrotzim.
Frogs are pretty good.
You said it's a $30 million
All right. Rav Yosef.
Wait, I have a question.
Okay.
For the word discussion. As applied in Yiddish to the non-Jew. But the singular would be that's the masculine. The feminine is shiksa. What is the derivation of the shiksa?
The same idea. An abomination. An abomination.
Yeah, so the plural of shiksa would be
shiksas. But it's not the Hebrew word. This is Yiddish.
So it's a derivation.
It's based on the derived from the Hebrew word. Right. Right.
Or Rav Yosef.
Alright. I'll do the next one, even though I'm not going to bother to give you the next page because we'll review it again. But anyway, just to finish this business, it says, oh, Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef said, Hai chala de shechra, de armoa, osur. Says vinegar, which comes from beer that the Arameans make, he says it's prohibited. Why? Because what do? They throw into it the lees of, you know, wine that's right. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
The
lees. You're right. You know, the crop. Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Okay.
Okay.
And Rav Ashi, my Yosef Shori, he says, well, if it comes out of the storehouse, he says, it's all right. Came in the army bay, because inasmuch as they have to be very careful, he says, because if not, it's going to be stinking, it'll spoil itself. All right, anyway, we'll do the last one next time.
If it comes from a Jewish warehouse.
Right.
It's permissible.
Okay.
But once they mix this wine sediment into it, it's spoiled with time.
Saying that it's covered by right, the warehouse. It's not usually open. If it was open, it would get spoiled.
Right.
You have a busy day tomorrow, Phil. Go.
Yes, I do. I want to skip next Wednesday night. I'll tell you why. Couple of reasons. First of all, it's immediately after Shavuos. I have no idea how and what I mean. Okay, tonight is the 22nd of June, year 2005. We are continuing now in Gemara Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Beis, Lamed Aleph, 32a. All right. So, the Mishnah mentioned certain things that belong to the, belong to the Akum, or they're used by the Akum, then you can't use it because of the fact that Yerin Desach is involved.
Who's Akum?
Huh? The Akum is Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Literally, it's Ovdei Kechovim Umazot.
You mean it's an abbreviation for Avodah Zarah.
Yeah. The real abbreviation for Avodah Zarah is Ayin Zayin. Ayin Zayin, you know, that's a Avodah Zarah.
Ayin,
there's Zayin, right? So that's a Avodah Zarah. However, the people who practice Avodah Zarah are very often referred to as Akum, which in a turn, you know, is an abbreviation for Avdim, they serve, right? Koychavim, stars, Umazolos, and constellations.
Okay?
Yeah, Mazal originally, by the way, meant really a constellation.
Mazal. Oh, that's interesting. It meant constellation.
It meant constellation. That's the original meaning of the word.
Did it also not mean signs? Signs, S-I-G-N-S.
No. But what happened is, you know, that since people believe, you know, that they're born under a lucky star, as we would say, so that therefore the word mazal became associated with the idea of mazal tov and so on. Right?
Yeah.
But the original meaning, as I say, is consolation. Right. So that the word akum is another way of saying Erdei Aved Zara. Okay.
Yeah, we understand.
It's a short way of saying
we understand.
Okay. Right. Okay. So
where are we?
We're on the fourth line of Lamed Beis. Lamed Beis, end of the third line, beginning of the fourth line.
What
okay? It's Vecheres Hadriyadi. Vecheres Hadriyadi. Which means, yes.
What line?
Hadrianic.
Oh,
Vecheres is, you know, like porcelain or. You know, jugs that are made of
earthenware.
Earthenware, right.
Okay.
So, of course, the Gemara wants to know, my Hadriani, what do you mean?
What
is this? Okay. Exactly. So, Rabbi Yehuda, Shmuel, so Yehuda said the name of Shmuel, says, Cheres Shel Hadriyadis Kesa, he says. This is the earthenware of Hadrian Caesar. Okay.
Caesar.
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 Or the emperor, if you wish, right? The emperor. Because, in other words, in Roman history, what happened is that after Julius Caesar, you know, became the dictator in Rome, so the successors to him, beginning with Augustus or Octavian, whatever you would name you, it's the same person, okay? He took on the name Caesar also. He was adopted by Caesar. And they took on the name Caesar, so that it became identified as the title of the emperor in Rome.
Right. Which then led to the word Kaiser.
Yes, of course. Kaiser, Tsar, etc. Yeah. Exactly, right.
Okay.
Yeah. So, that's the story over there. Okay? So, the question is, what? Was Hadrian in the business of making earthenware? Obviously not. So, therefore, Rashi has to explain to us. He says, "Kishayotze v'gayasus molechot imo." It says when the soldiers of Hadrian went out on a campaign to wage warfare, then they would make this. So they we know historically what it is. Now we have to find out. So what is it?
They would make it a certain way. You
they
mean? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yes.
Idea.
Right. So. It's explained now in the next couple of lines how they made it. Kiyosa Ravdimi, when Ravdimi came, whenever it says Kiyosa Ravdimi means when he came to Babylonia from Eretz Yisrael, where in Eretz Yisrael they had the tradition about what this was.
Yeah, I mean,
don't forget, Eretz Yisrael was under the dominion of who? Under the dominion of Rome. Whereas Babylonia was ruled by whom? The answer is the Persians. Right. Right.
I was trying to think of the name of the king, but we
right.
Don't know.
No, there's a whole line of them. Go remember them. But, you know, the Babylonian was, if you remember, was conquered by Persia under
the
reign of
Cyrus.
Cyrus, or Koresh in Hebrew, right. And then, you know, his successors were the rulers of that part of Asia Minor. Okay. Of course, they made war with the Greeks, etc. Afterwards, it was war with the Romans. But Babylonians.
Was it Cyrus who also let them go back?
Yes.
That's what I thought.
Yes, right. Right. Yeah, the return from the Babylonian exile was permitted by King Cyrus and encouraged by him.
Doctor, can I just ask you where we are?
We are on Lamed Beis, Omid Aleph. And welcome back. I haven't seen you in several weeks.
All right.
Okay. So, Ravdimi explains the tradition that he had back in Eretz Yisrael as to what this Hadrianic earthenware is. He says, Omar, he said, Karka b'sulo ha'iso shle vodo odo meyolam. He says, there was virgin soil which no one had ever worked on before. So, what happened? avodah in the Torah, so he decided that it should be worked, should be tilled, right, and planted. The Ramele, the Chamra, the Gulfe Chive. And then, when the vineyards that obviously had been planted over there, it doesn't say so, but it's understood, because the next word says, the Chamra, Chamra is the wine, eyes are white. So he says that the wine that resulted from this plantation, he says, they went and they stuck it into Gulfe Chivre. So the question is, what's Gulfe? Gulfe, so Rashi tells us, God bless Rashi, he knew the answers. He said, clay cheres, earthenware, that's what Gulfe is. Because don't forget, there are many, many words in the Talmud.
Gulfe.
That if it weren't for Rashi, we would have great difficulty in knowing what they are. Because he knew the tradition.
Brilliant.
He was a great scholar, Rashi. He spent the days and nights in the study of Torah, except when he was busy selling wine to make a living. Right. But the rest of the time he was, studying, writing, etc., etc. Okay. So, I also have to tell you, that there, he was familiar also with literature that had preceded his time. There was a dictionary that had been published back around the 8th, 9th century or something like that, called the Aruch. And he was familiar with it, and the person who compiled that particular dictionary, the Talmud, was familiar with several different languages. So as a result, he could look up the word Gulfi, you would see, what the Aruch had to say. But still, he had to know this literature, and if it were not in the Aruch, then how would he know what it is? So the answer is, he was so steeped in all, not only the books of the Bavli, the Talmud Bavli, but also the Yerushalmi, Jerusalem Talmud, right, and the Midrashim, and other words, Chuvas HaGa'onim and things like that had preceded him, so that he knew what it meant.
How old a man was he when he wrote the Yerushalmi or here and the Mikra? Was he a man in his 60s, 30s? I mean, is there any way of knowing that?
I wouldn't know for certain. But we do know that he had descendants. Rashi had daughters, okay?
Right.
And they married great scholars. And as a result, of the union, so in turn, they had offspring who were great scholars as well. Rabbeinu Tam is one of the outstanding descendants of Rashi. The Rashbab, Rabbi Shmuel Ben Meir, was another one, and so on.
You told me that Rashi's daughter was great, told me them.
Yes.
They were great.
I'm sure.
Great.
You know what they say? I say in Yiddish, that the dinst, the servant woman who grows up in the Rav's house, she can pass with
Shilas. What century are we talking about for him now?
Rashi?
Yeah.
Rashi would be about the 11th century. 10th, 1000s. He lived during the time of the Crusades.
He died in 1105.
Yeah. So, so at any rate, Rashi tells us that Gulfi, that means clay charas, he says, it's earthenware jugs. So, in other words, what they do, they took the wine that the vineyard produced and they put it into this earthenware jug, okay? Literally, white earthenware jugs. Okay, that's fine. At any rate, these were very absorbent. Because, one of the problems that they have with kosher is, why do you throw away a dish, for example, if it becomes treif? It's a milking dish and you put kleshiks in it, or vice versa, something like that. Because we say...
You say the way jugs were, they weren't fired
right.
In any way. They weren't put through a kiln or anything like that. They were just plain ordinary jugs.
Okay. Could be.
I'm not
aware
of
the manufacturer of it, But you're right, that once you had the glaze on it, then
that's right,
it
wasn't
hard.
Right, you don't want to throw anything.
That's one purpose. But, you
the
know.
Ordinary clay, though, is very porous. Clay pots are porous.
Exactly. So, what happens? So, these jugs actually absorb
the wine
that was placed in them. Okay? But my son, who is my who? The trouble who the hospital, the door, but I. So, he says, they squeeze the wine into it, right? And then what did they do when they were out in the field? Remember, we're talking about the army. Remember? Hadrian's army. So they would take it, they would break it into pieces, and guess what? They would suck upon it.
Well,
they had wine.
So they actually soaked it in water, they said.
Right. Well, soaked it in the water, it got fine, okay.
And then they drank it.
Right. But at any rate, this is
how
they
really wanted the wine.
The Dorabadai, and they slept it with them wherever they went.
Yeah, right.
Right, the whole Heyaka, the Motu, wherever they got to, so he says, Torah Lehu Vashasa. They would take it out, drink it, and they had field rations, so to speak. Okay, they had wine.
Previous to this, didn't they used to use the leather sacks for carrying wine?
They also.
Wine from the concentrate.
Right. At any rate, so, all right, so now we have to ask the question. I mean, Mr. Gemara doesn't ask it, but the most Gemara understands that we know the answer. The answer is, so why was it prohibited for a Jew?
Because it absorbed the non-kosher wine.
Exactly, it absorbed the non-kosher wine.
We couldn't use it those earthenware jars.
So for that reason, a Jew was not allowed to have any hanor from it. He couldn't drink it. He wasn't allowed to have any advantage, any benefit from it. Okay.
Tongueware wouldn't absorb. Could you explain that at all?
What wouldn't?
Well, dung, it gets hardened.
What dung?
They wouldn't use it, actually.
What?
Tongueware.
Dung. They had different ways. I mean, containers could be made not just from earthenware, but they also would use stoneware, for example. And they would also take dung, animal dung, have it hardened in the sun over a period of time and so on, and then they were able to shape it and use the part of the deal. Apparently, it was sterile enough during the sun, that they were able to do it and not get sick from using it. Something that I don't think any of us would be able to make use of today.
In Russia, I saw in the villages people were still using the wooden ware.
Wooden
ware.
Knives, forks, and so on. I remember spoons, definitely. But a shizzle.
You can't even buy it.
No. I unfortunately got rid of my mother-in-law. I had the last big bowl that we used to use. I used to make all my chopped liver.
Right. It's nice to remember. And the gefilte fish, all the sort of good things, chopping and so on.
But these were right. Ancient. She had the roller.
And Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, the Risha in Shalono, he says, the finest wine that we drink, Jewish wine, he says, Kishlishi Shalohen, it would be considered a third rate wine by them. That's one of my opinion. However, Rashi says, now it doesn't mean third rate. What it means, he says, is that Enoel Kishlishi Shalohen, he says, they soak it three times in water, says Rashi, right? And nevertheless, even though it's been soaked and soaked again and soaked again, right? Then this watery wine combination was still superior to our own wine.
Just so that's what's in common. Not necessarily superior in quality, but just stronger now that it's more concentrated?
Yeah, undoubtedly. It's because the other one's concentrated to the extent that even though they mix it again and again with water. So, now, I've told you also that in the past, the wine in those days that the Jews made Normally it had to be mixed with wine, with water also. It had to be diluted, because if you drank it straight, very, very strong.
I think that they made it that way, honestly, because they wanted the alcohol content to be very high so it wouldn't go bad. Of course, they didn't have,
refrigeration. Well, it's true. Right.
And then they didn't store it. They drank it pretty fresh. Wouldn't that have something to do with it, too?
Well, they could store it, but with storage, you have to be careful because wine could turn sour on you.
Right.
P.S.
Exactly.
You got vinegar,
and
not wine,
you
know.
And then you store it in,
right.
And there's a problem of the casks.
Yeah. Right. Okay, we'll begin weiter, okay, as we say in French. Right. So now they ask a funny question. I have to tell you at this point. It's a funny, but strange question. It says, Ibarlu, question was asked. It says, Mahu mismech bahen kare hamita. What if you use these shards, or shards, whatever you want to call them, a shard. They spell it as H-E-R-D, they used to spell it as H-A-R-D, okay? All right, so what if you use these shards in order to prop up the legs of a bed? What if? So, Rotsa Biki Yumai Ayadei Dover Ache Shori O Osa. So the question is, if you want to preserve this by putting it to a different use, is it permissible or is it prohibited? Now, of course, what are we talking about? We're talking about not so much our concern with the shard itself, but it still contains wine in it. You understand? So the question is, okay, if you use it in order to prop up the legs of the bed, then in that particular case, is it permissible to do so, or are we still bound by the fact that we said before that this Adriatic earthenware, right, is prohibited for hadar? Remember, what does hadar mean? Hadar means any kind of a benefit, whatever. Not necessarily monetary. Although very often that is the benefit,
not necessarily,
but not necessarily
eat,
right.
Either.
This particular case, it's to prop it up. So, your or the name, is it permissible or not? Toshma. So, listen to the following. So, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yochanan, there's a difference of opinion between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yochanan. Chad osar, the chad shor, a one authority prohibited it, and the other one permitted it. And in brackets, it says, the Hilchas or Kamandu Asara, the Allah follows the one who says that it is prohibited. Okay.
Permitted to use it as a proper for the bed.
Right. This particular type cannot be used because of the Yayin of Edazori and all that's involved. Okay. So now they ask the following question. We have another tradition, Tosefta, which reads as follows. It says, Adar Dorin Baharuk Ba'os Shalodei Kochadim. Okay? If you have, and what are these strange words that we see over here? So according to Rashi, Adar Dorin, he says, Lugin and Ketan. In other words, they are small containers. Okay? And Ruk Ba'os says Targumo shall chemis. He says the translation, the word chemis, which means literally a wineskin, right, is rukba. Okay, the hein shalo, and they are made of skin. All right. So in other words, whether it's a small container, the hadadorim, right, or the rukbos, which are skins, but are used for storage, right? Okay, and
for wine storage or for any kind of storage.
Well, it could be for water too. We're not talking about
but
water,
liquid,
we're talking about the
storage.
Wine. Right. Okay. So, and it says further, Yayin shall Yisrael konus bohen, right? And what do they contain? They contain wine, Jewish wine, okay? So, in other words, these skins, these containers, they are used by the goyim, right? But a Jew came along, what did he do? He stored his own wine in them. So now, of course, the question is there absorption? In which case the wine would be prohibited, right? Even though it is Jewish wine. Or is there no absorption? In which case what? It would be permitted. So that's why we have a difference
even
of opinion between
the
authorities. Right. It's a question. Right, it's a question. Right. Okay. Well, as we see, the tendency is to say what?
Prohibited.
Right. It's prohibited.
It's like any kelim
right.
today.
So at any rate, the Gemara says it's also Mishdiya, right? It is prohibited for drinking. You can't drink that wine anymore. But it says, however, you can derive some benefit from it. Okay? And now they bring a quotation. Hey, Shimon ben Gudo, if nei beno shel Rabbi Gamliel, or Rabbi Gamliel. Shimon ben Gudo testified in the presence of Rabbi Gamliel's son something that he had witnessed that Rabbi Gamliel had done. What is it? Sheshosa mimenu biyakul. Right? He was akul. You know where that is?
Yeah.
Right. North of Haifa, right?
North of Haifa.
Okay. So he was there in akul, and he drank from such a container wine. Okay? V'lo hodulo. And they did not really accept the idea. Hodul means, you know, that they would agree. They were not in agreement with it. So the question is, who was it? The fact that it's full would seem to indicate that the other rabbis who were present did not agree that he did the right thing. Okay? Then it continues and it says, Nodos shel oide kechavim, the skins, you know, the skin containers, okay, of goyim. Rabbi Shimon Amdiel Oimer. So Rabbi Shimon Amdiel says, Mishum Rabbi Yoshua ben Kefusai, in the name of Rabbi Yoshua, the son of Kefusai, says, Osir la seis behen shatichim lachamor. He says, you're not allowed to use these skins in order to make, for us, the shatiach usually means a carpet on Hebrew. However, here, normally means a carpet. But here, you don't put a carpet on top of a donkey. What do you put on top of a donkey? A saddle, right?
But they used to put a rug first.
Yeah, it could very well be.
Yeah, on,
could be.
On horses
right.
as well.
But at any rate, I mean, obviously it's made of this leather. So the question is, it goes back to the original problem that we had a few lines before, namely, with the Hadrianic, the shards, what did we say?
That they're not usable.
You can't use it for to prop up a bed, even though, as we say, you're using it for a davar acher, for a different purpose altogether than the original one. So, according to this tradition that we just read, the same thing would apply to what? So a skin pitcher, which is not being used in order to hold wine in it, but it's being used instead, but it had wine in it one time, obviously, it had goyish wine in it, right?
Goyish wine.
Right, had goyish wine in it, and it's being used right now in order to make, like, a saddle for the camel.
Or camel.
Right.
You mean the leather?
The leather, right. Right.
No recycling there. No recycling allowed.
Right. It's the same story again, that he wants to make use of it, but for a different purpose, not for the wine. That's it. Because osur, and we've already learned that such a thing in the clay harris quite is prohibited, so therefore it should apply to the same thing, right? So, Velita may. And if you go according with your opinion, he says, Kankan im shalodekechobim litzeru lemizbin. He says, then in that particular case, a Jew should not be permitted to buy casks, you know, barrels, right, that had been used for you know, for wine storage previously, right? And they say, Maishla doidos or Maishla kamkanim, and tell me, what is the difference between skin pitchers and between barrels, right? So Amar Rava, so Rava says, well, it's gezero shemi boka noidoi, yet lenin yisperin agave noidoi. Says, the reason is, why we prohibit it, is sometimes the skin container, right, will crack, and so he'll take it and he'll put it on top of another one in order to strengthen it. In other words, he'll sew it together in order to give the other one, you know, more better storage ability. So therefore we prohibit it in order that we don't want such a thing to happen, you know, that they're using this in order to preserve wine. Okay.
No, like kind of
born
together.
Yeah, exactly.
Contingency.
Exactly. It's exactly what it is. Correct. Well, Amando Omar, and now in accordance with the opinion which says, in accordance with the opinion that says that if you want to use it for a different purpose, nevertheless, it still is prohibited. So he says, "Ma'ishdor kankanim disharu." So, why do we say that these containers, that barrels could be put in them? Before it said couldn't. Now, apparently, there are those who think that it can be. So, Amalachor. So he said to you, "Hosum leisad yisurid beinay." Obviously, Sugida. He says, in one case, by itself it's already prohibited, and in the other case it's only prohibited because of what? Because of the gezeira. We don't want, in other words, the difference between the barrel as a container and between the wineskin we can see. Why is it prohibited? It's prohibited because it might crack, etc., etc. Okay. So why do we prohibit the container? Because of the fact that we have this problem with the wineskin, and therefore we want to prohibit any container which had held what?
Wine.
That's right. Okay. Well, I don't have to tell you that the problem, to a certain extent, still exists. I mentioned it before, that some scotches, they say, are aged in barrels which contained wine before, okay? And that being the case, the question is, did the cask really absorb so much wine that when you put in the scotch, or the same thing would be true of liqueur, right? But particularly scotch in this particular place, but of course, but liqueur is another problem. But would it affect it to the extent, you know, that it sort of becomes contaminated as yainess, if you understand. With liqueur, they actually do mix in very often grape juice or wine or something or other with it. So that's why you have to know that with a liqueur, whether it's kosher or it's not kosher.
So
the curse always requires a kosher.
For the scotches, then? It doesn't hold for the scotches? Or
for most of the scotch, there's no problem. But here and there, they'll single out a brand that they say that this one happened to be.
So they permit it even if it had wine in the cask before?
If they know that they didn't, then they would say no. But most scotches are aged in barrels which do not contain. Right.
Oh.
So that therefore,
If they knew it would be forbidden.
Right. If you know it's specific. You know, that already brings another problem with kashrus in general.
Yeah.
We have a problem, which is a statement which says, called the parish, meruba parish, which means when you have a single item, you have to assume that it comes from what the majority of similar items are. Okay? So, in that particular case, if we would say that all, you know, that most of the scotch, okay, most scotch is not aged in barrels which formerly contained wine, then the presumption is, if we don't know anything more about that particular brand, that it's okay because it follows the rule of the majority in that particular case. Yeah. Naturally, if everybody, if you know specifically that in that case it's prohibited, but if you don't know, then you have to follow the rule of the majority in that particular case.
Yeah. Yes. I read that in that particular regard of scotch, the thumb defies the rule of just pure majority because thumb inhibits the whole volume.
Yeah, well, we have a big problem with thumb again. I mean, you know, thumb is taste. Right.
Yeah.
In other words, certain things may be prohibited because it imparts a taste to the particular item, you know, which you know would spoil it from the point of view of kashrus. You see, you have all kinds of you know, kashrus is, it's not an easy subject. Okay, take my word for it.
Question: yeah. Blended whiskey is
yeah.
something that was in those former wine containers, right?
Right.
And pure scotch is just never
not right.
Is there?
In general, I would say that that's correct. Right.
Very single malt.
Yeah. With the blended whiskey, there's a possibility that they do add something. There is that possibility.
Wouldn't it have to say?
They're not required. That's the problem. So people have to do research on this.
So
periodically, we get a list. Right.
Can you depend upon the Bramfords?
Yes.
Sigrids?
Only for me.
Not for everything. Not for everything. No.
I read what is Canadian whiskey of Seagram's, the Scotia American is not. This was on the OU's website.
Yeah.
Canadian Seagram is okay, but American
Seagram
is not.
Can I ask you, what are we afraid that they're adding to Scotch and this single malt? What do you call Scotch and this single malt?
No, no. I don't think it's blended. Blended means that they add different, you know, from this one, that one, so literally that's what blended means.
What are we afraid that they're adding? That might not be kosher.
Well, if we know, for example, that they add wine to it, then there's no question. That's no good. But the question is also whether, as we have over here, does the container in which they age it, does it impart also a taste of the... see, this is a question.
Well,
here
you
see. Okay. Right.
So if you had these old wine barrels and you wanted to use them to store goods, like a storekeeper...
Yeah, well, that would be okay.
But you would get an oath from them.
Huh?
I'm talking about
if it belonged to a guy, if it had goyish wine in it.
It had originally goyish wine in it, and it went up for sale cheap, and the storekeeper buys it to put to store.
All right. I would say, under these circumstances, I would accept the opinion, even though the majority says that it's prohibited. We have a good authority to say that it's permissible.
It is permissible. Like
how many barrels?
Storage.
Yeah, how many barrels are you going to use for storage?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Do they use much wood today, or is it metal?
These days, it's very difficult to find a wooden barrel.
What I can imagine in the old country stores, you know, which were all mainly owned by Jews, that such a problem could arise.
I wouldn't say that the problem did not arise, but
I can picture it in the country places where they took out
new barrels. They couldn't necessarily buy barrels they had wine in.
They could have, but I'm saying that they lived in a country that was non-Jewish mainly.
Right.
And they had the main stores and they had merchandise, and I can just picture them
using
a country store. They always had barrels of stuff.
However,
dry products.
Question is, however, you see, here this is Yayin Nesach we're talking about, wine which was actually used as a libation. Now, the average guy today doesn't use a libation. So it's called Stam Yenam, right? As we learned. So with Stam Yenam, we're a little bit more makel than we would be in the case of, you know.
Libation is for worship.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So it'd have to be like sacrament
on
wine. That would be.
Yeah, or you know that they actually used it in order to, you know, for church service or something yeah, like that. And that would be prohibited. Okay.
Which
they do. We'll go a couple of more lines. All right. Then it says, "Velo hodolo," right? And they did not agree with what he did. So, Varam Hintu. So now we have a contrary opinion, right? Which says, Yayin habo berukbo shalev dekachovim osu bishtiyo umutpano. This says that wine that comes in the containers that, you know, of idolaters is prohibited to be drunk, but it's permissible to what? To have benefit from it. You see what I see? And then you have say no, but you also have an opinion which says yes. And Hayat Shimon ben Guda, Lefnei Beno Shal Rabbi Gamliel, or Rabbi Gamliel Shoshosam Yemenu ben Harkuf, right? That he, you know, the story about Rabbi Gamliel, that he was an arko and he drank from such a container, right? And it says Vahodulo, and they agreed with him. Before, what did we say? We said below Hodolo, right? They didn't agree with him. Yeah. Here, this tradition says that they agreed with him. Mar Hossam, right? Said over there, Kol Siato. In other words, the rest of the people who were there, the rest of the group of rabbis, they taka what?
Right.
They did not. Okay.
They
didn't agree with him.
Oh,
okay.
They didn't agree with him.
Avol beno, modelei. But his son did agree with him. Actually, it would be Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Okay. So, how come that we have two contradictory traditions? So the answer is, maybe. Iboy Seymo. So if you wish, a possible explanation is that Guda Lechud, the Guda Lechud. But notice the difference in the spelling. One is spelled Gimel Vov Dalet Aleph, and the other one is Gimel Vov Dalet Ayin. So therefore we have to assume that there were two different people, and each one had a different version of what actually took place over there. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's why it
but
says this one the hood, this one the hood.
There were not two different persons.
Huh?
There were not two.
No. Now, according to this, there were. It says, Ibrahim Sema, if you wish, you can say. But it doesn't mean that that's right. It's a theory, okay? But there were two different people. Okay. And each one had his own particular version.
Is Guda a name?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. All right. I'll tell you, I think I'm going to stop at this point. Start it on the shiur, and hopefully my voice will be able to carry for a few minutes anyway. Okay. Tonight is the 29th already of the month of June, the year 2005. We are at the very bottom of Gemara Avodah Zarah. Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, in other words, 32a, and we continue now with the last two lines over there. We are currently interpreting what the Mishnah had to say about things that are prohibited because of their association with Avodah Zarah, okay? And one of the things that the Mishnah mentioned happened to be Oros Levuvin, which means that these are skins.
Or, right.
Right?
Yeah,
which
yeah.
have the heart cut out. Okay?
Yeah.
So, the question is, you know, how do we distinguish between one thing and the other? So, the answer is,
oh, I got this.
Oh, you have? Okay.
cheating.
Yeah, you're cheating today. Okay, you're entitled. Okay. So the Gemara says over here that Tanarabonim, sages taught us, that says, Ezehu or Lobuv, what do we mean by a skin which has the heart cut out? So he says, Kol Shekarua Kedegat HaLev. This means the word Lobuv, it comes to the word Lev, okay? As a matter of fact, the word Lev itself, yeah, the bottom of Lobuv, 32A, right. Good evening. Hi, why everybody? Hi, hi. How you doing?
We call it a heart rest skin.
A heart rest. Okay. Sorry. Okay. At the bottom over here. How you doing, Greg? Okay. Good. Good. Okay. Marty, how are you?
How are you, Doc?
Okay. Fine. Thank you. Okay. So, I started to say, we know the word lev for a heart, but the word lev could also be levav. Think of the first line of the Hatikva. What does it say? Kol od balevav panima. As long as within our hearts, right? Right. Nefesh Yehudi Homir, you know, a Jewish soul yearns, okay, etc., etc. So, you know. So, Od lo also sickle Seder, right? Our hope is not yet lost. So, Levov can also mean heart. Therefore, the word Levov, as you can see, means something that had to do with the heart itself, okay? So, he wants to know, how can we say the skin is hearty? Which Levov would mean grammatically, okay? Would mean hearty. Of course, not like the English word hearty. You know, I mean, you're talking about a hearty appetite, a hearty meal, or something like that. But, you know, here we have an adjective and we need a definition for it. So the Gemara now proceeds to say, Kol Shekara, Kedegat HaLev. Wherever you see a tear in it, it is torn in the area of the heart. So then we know that this is, and not only that, but it's the Kodur, it's like drilled, Kimin Aruba, like a window. But what do we mean like a window? So you have to realize, in the olden days, they didn't have the kind of windows that we have, modern windows. Instead, in general, it was like a hole that went through the wall. This is what a window was, okay? So, that being the case, that's exactly how he's describing it. It's drilled through, right? Just like a window. In other words, it goes all the way from the outside into the inside, and therefore what is the supposition? The supposition would be that
they
took out the heart. Exactly. So therefore they want to define this a little bit more closely. So the Gemara says, Yesh alav koredam osa. If you can see a spot of blood, then we know that it is prohibited, because it means what? That this was not, you know, like a normal tear that sometimes happens. I mean, we know that every skin is going to come out perfect, right? But here, this, you can see it was actually drilled in in order to, right? So that we know, and therefore you can see it by virtue of the fact that there's a spot of blood. So therefore, if you see the spot of blood, then that's also, then it's prohibited. And we continue on the next slide with the other page, right? 32B, Lamed Beis. And in that case, but ain't no love covered done. What if there is no spot of blood upon it? And then in that case, Buto, that's permitted, because in that case, we would assume that the, you know, the hole that we find in the skin is simply it's an imperfection, but not something that was done purposely for the sake of it or something. So this is what the Gemara is saying. Okay. So I'm going to have, yes, of course.
What I don't understand about that is that what would indicate that It's the heart and not any other part, any other thing.
The answer is that they know in general. I mean, take an animal, okay?
Yeah.
You remember when women used to wear furs around them?
Right.
So
they know the shape that it's supposed
exactly,
to be.
Exactly, right.
So,
I mean, if you have, let's say, a fox skin, okay? In that particular case, I mean, you had an idea, you know, where the heart would be located in the fox.
So my question
is,
if it's the skin that where normally the heart would have been, and they actually drilled it out, and you got the blood, you know, and that, but how could that same piece where the heart was not have blood on it?
What I'm saying is, I understand, right.
If the heart was there at any point,
there
would almost have to be blood.
Rashi says, top line over there, says, Achar hefsheto, once you've skinned the animal, okay? Irabokach, right? And so you see that this is what happened this way. And obviously it was not intended, you know, for Avedis.
It was just skin.
Right, just a piece of skin, which had a hole.
All right, yeah,
it had a hole over there.
I understand that.
All right.
Doctor,
yes.
After a minor Hebrew question, what would be the word in Hebrew today for spot?
A spot? Spot, you mean like, you know, it would be like moon or something like that.
Oh, blemish.
Blemish, right. But there's another word. I mean, the word is revav. Revav. Revav ala begat, for example. You know.
Well, if we're talking about a spot of blood in modern Hebrew, like they had here before.
Yeah, then in that particular case, you could use the word korot. Exactly, you could use the word that we have over here in the Gemara.
Oh.
Yeah, korot.
They use the heart for some kind of evasive practices.
Yes, yes. I said for the past few weeks, I mean, that this was not only a possibility in the Roman and Greek world, but we know that it happened specifically in the Aztecs, the Mayans, I mean, that, you know, part of their sacrifice, they would take a human being and they would tear out the heart, you know. So this was a form of Avedizara that apparently was fairly common in various areas of the world. Right. Okay. Omar Rafuna. Rafuna said, Lo shanu ele shalei milcho. Abo milcho osir. He says, this business with, you know, whether you can see a spot of blood or not, it applies only where they did not yet salt the skin. Apparently, they put skin in brine and salt or something like that in order to cure it. So, that being the case, as long as they had not yet put it into the salt and you saw blood, right, then in that case you knew that it was no good.
Right.
If you didn't see any blood, then you knew that it was okay.
Right, but it had to be before the curing, otherwise
but it had to be exactly. Because as he says, you know, in the next couple of lines, in the next couple of words, he says, although milcho also, right, if he had already put it in salt, then it's prohibited, because amor, I would say then, that milcho have a rasa, that as a result of putting in the salt, that already we removed the blood.
Right.
So that, therefore, you have to know in what condition you find it when you say without blood. Okay? I mean, we know whatever we do as far as koshering is concerned. Right? First, put it to salt. Right. Exactly. In order to remove the blood. Right. Okay. Then the Mishnah continues, and it said, he says that this mancha kera shalo ogul. Osur, but Moshuch Mutar. He says, when you take a look at the skin, now he's not talking about the blood. That was a different opinion. That was Rav Huda's opinion, okay? Or, actually, first it was the Rabbanan in general, and as interpreted by Rav Huda, but now we go back to the Mishnah, and we see the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, and he said that as long as the tear in the skin itself is round, then it is prohibited, because presumably that would be heart-shaped, okay? But mashuch, if the tear is only, you know, like going a long rip or something like that, then it's permissible. Right. Yeah. So Amar Rav Yosef, so Rav Yosef said Amar Rav Yehuda, in the name of Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, he said in the name of Shmuel, Halachic Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, that the halachic taka follows what Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel said. So Amalei Abaye, so Abaye said to him, Halacha, the klal de flige, you say that halacha follows? When you say halacha, what is the presumption? The presumption? The presumption may be that there is a disagreement with him. I mean, why do you make a statement and say that halacha follows him? Because the implication is, you know, that then others do not agree with the Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel's opinion. Okay, so it says Amalei. So he said to him, "My nafkin l'chomino. What difference does it make to you? The final analysis. Everybody is in agreement, you know, as to what constitutes, you know, a skin where the heart has been removed. Whether you say it's, you know, by virtue of the shape that it's round. Before we also said kodur, right? That was mentioned before." And as far as the blood is concerned, okay, so this is something added in order to make sure, you know, that we know that, you know, that the definitely occurred. So he says, my nafkin chom, you know, what difference does it make to you? So Amalei, he says, Gemara Gomor, he says, look, go and learn Gemara, so go and learn what the tradition is. But, and don't let it be just like a song in your eyes. In other words, Bitumia says Rashi, he's surprised. Abaye Talmido Shel Rav Yosef, he says. Abaye was the disciple of Rav Yosef. And you're the one who teaches us that the follow, that the halacha follows him. And it's like a song in general. Because if there is no difference of opinion, so why do you have to make a statement that the halacha follows? Everybody agrees. Okay. No.
It's green hairs.
Right. Right. All right. Now we come.
What was Rashi? Rashi was. What was he trying to say by saying this?
Rashi is saying, you know, that it's Mia. We were surprised, you know, that he was asking him. He said, well, why do you mention the word halacha? I mean, when everybody is in agreement that this is halacha. Because the minute you say that halacha, you seem to be implying then that there has been disagreement with the opinion.
Because they mentioned it was in the Gamliel's,
right.
In the name of Gamliel. They mentioned halacha.
Yeah, Rabbi Shimon
Gamliel,
right. Yeah, it was Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel.
So, well, he was just mentioning the law,
yeah.
But nobody was disagreeing with him.
Right, right.
Gamliel just made a statement that this whole thing is disputed, so the rabbis, what difference does it make when it's disputed? It's got to be disputed anyway. All things are disputed. So
well, it's a different way of looking at it. Okay. Is that what they say over there in your text?
Yeah. Well, it says, Abaye said the halakha rests with him implies that the matter is disputed.
Right.
What difference does it make to you retorted the other, to which he replied, it's learning Gemara, then to be like the song, singing of a song. Is it going to be like a singing of a song? I mean, you know, you just sing a song and nothing comes of it. You know, it's just a song. It's going to be a dispute.
Well. Okay.
All of a sudden, he started getting upset about the fact that he's having a dispute here.
Yeah.
Because of
all right.
You couldn't say it's just Lamahad Sidur itself, just for the sake of good order, just to say this is what the law is. You must have a dispute in order to make that statement.
The truth of the matter is that usually when you say that halacha follows this and that, when there's been a dispute before, you know, dispute with various authorities. I mean, otherwise you don't normally say that, you know, and the halacha is as follows.
Right.
You say that A says this and B says that.
Then the synthesis.
Right, so in that particular case, if you say The hilchos or the halacha is, you know, in that particular case, obviously it supports the opinion of one or the other, or sometimes of a third party, who knows.
But, no, this rabbi was simply pointing out that right. You didn't have to make such a statement because there was
right.
No dispute on this.
Right, right.
It's just a statement of law.
Correct. Okay. All right, now we come, however, into the more difficult thing that the Mishnah mentioned, namely the question of meat. Okay, basar hadichdas lavis kechovim mutar, which means that the meat of a person who is going to idolatry is permissible. Of course, we're talking about kosher meat. The goy has kosher meat that he wants to sell to the Jew. Okay?
Why would he?
It's a good question, but he wants to make business. Why does Big Y want to sell meat to Jews?
Yeah, and they're left with the whole rest of the animal to sell elsewhere. They're doing it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, at any rate, I mean, you know, obviously the goyim also were selling meat to the Jews, but, you know, the Jew has to know.
Isn't it that big company, Amor, or whatever that big...
Yes, Amor.
Amor, right, don't they
right.
Do that? Isn't that what they
yeah,
do?
Yeah, a lot of companies.
They,
right.
They sell the rest of the animal?
Yeah, of course.
Right,
right, yeah. Yeah, those are several big slaughterhouses, you know, that do that. So, at any rate, it's a little bit surprising that we figure that here, the guy is carrying meat, right, and he's on his way to the temple of Bezalel, and yet it says, as long as he's on his way, right, you can still buy the meat from him. Of course, what is the implication? He's not there yet. He didn't get to the Avodah Zarah yet. So in that particular case, it would be permissible. That's why he says
it's and the animal was in no way involved in the Avodah Zarah.
Right, right. So because obviously it has to be a kosher animal we're talking about.
Doctor, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm just picking up on what Greg said. And I think you just answered it, but here it's not basar hanikmas la.
Well, that's
kosher. So you're saying, I mean, it's not meat that a idolater is handling. It's apparently to this meat that it's going to actually go into the sacrificial rite.
Yeah, that's correct. All right, let's take a look at the Rashi.
Okay.
Thank God for Rashi. All right. Also, you see, there's a little star that says "Basar Nifnas Habitis Kachavim." You see it?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So he says, "Shavuot kechavim reitzelach nisay." The idolater actually wants to bring it into his temple, right? But nevertheless, muta b'hador, it is permissible, you know, to do business with it. Im nisay yisrael litlo im kenisaso kodem shakivotzo. If the Jew takes it from the goy, in other words, he buys it from the goy, right? Literally, as he enters, but before they actually sacrifice this animal, so the Jew would be permitted.
So he enters.
All right, right. Yeah. So this one is okay.
Don't surprise me. Means it's meat. Why doesn't it say an animal? Because in reality, if it was meat, how does he know
it's shekel? Yeah, it's a good question. Frankly, to me it makes more sense to take it in the sense of the animal itself based upon what we just read in the Rashi. Because what Rashi says, you know, is that they want to sacrifice this. Now, what do you sacrifice? Sacrifice a piece of meat. I mean, normally you sacrifice an animal. So, therefore, it makes more sense, you know, to understand the word basar over here in the sense of an animal.
So, actually... the rest of the animal is going to be.
It's alive. Yeah.
Oh, it's still alive.
The animal is still alive. It hasn't been sacrificed.
I know when you say meat. Yeah.
Right. The Jew wants to buy it. He can buy it. You understand?
Well, it's just the animal.
Right. Doctor, doesn't this seem to contradict almost all of this parak? I mean, in a sense.
To a certain extent, it does. I mean, because we learned, you know, that they're allowed to do business with them before their festival days and so on. Right. But here we're not talking necessarily about a festival day. talking about the private individual. He wants to take it into his temple of Avodah Zarah and sacrifice it over there. Okay.
Don't we still have the same suspicion that he may have been into all these sort of bestial activities? I mean, we don't know when this man done before he decided to bring this heifer or whatever into the town. So, I mean, I find that
okay. Interesting. You raise a very, very good question. Right. Okay.
Considering all the questions
but
that
maybe
they
what
make,
we
you
have to do
with.
Maybe what we have to do is to put a little bit of stress on the fact that it says in Rashi, in Nisar Yisrael, if the Jew is very careful to easy reading is, you know, he's very careful to do it before the guy actually sacrifices it. Even at the entrance to the Avodah Zarah temple, you understand? But nevertheless, I think that in general, Nisar Yisrael is very important. I mean, that the Jew has to know very carefully, you know, what's the story about this particular animal.
Can I just have a clarification?
Yeah.
We're talking about he's got this animal and he's going to his church, to his temple.
Right.
But on the way, he meets this very careful Jew who sees this lovely animal.
Right. And who knows the background of the animal.
Whatever. And decides to buy it. Then this guy can make more money selling it. Then he decides he's not going to be such a holy guy after all.
Yeah.
So the animal goes to the Jew and does not go to the Avodah Zarah.
Okay, correct.
Is that what this is?
Yeah, right.
That's a good point.
If it's an animal somebody slaughtered, then you have a different problem.
The pretense that the
problem about the money.
Hold up here because it's a priest.
That's kind of like selling a blue of an extra on the way to
the
show on
the
call.
The Jew has the government. The Jew cannot change the quarter, the substitute. Once the animal is designated.
Correct.
But the goy has the
kavona. The goy is not bound by the Torah law.
You wonder how the Torah
law says, lo yach mifenu.
He's
not allowed to exchange it, right? But if he should do it, then both the animal that he uses as substitution and the original animal are both paid.
It shouldn't happen.
So in other words,
the goy should come on his
way. Right, right. The guy doesn't have that kavana, that's all. Exactly.
The pretext that the animal was one of the moral things involved should probably be dismissed because it's a priest involved.
Pardon me?
The pretext that somebody brought up is that the moral activity was involved prior to this purchase would probably be dismissed.
You mean immoral?
Immoral. It would probably be dismissed because you're dealing with a priest here, so it's higher maybe.
No. Not necessarily. Who says that the priest is so good? Look at all the pedophiles.
In those days, it might have been dismissed. They didn't know what was going on in the church.
They would have been worse.
Nowadays, of course, it wouldn't be.
Okay. All right. Anyway, this is what the Mishnah said, right? So the Gemara wants to know, Mantana. Who is the one who gave this particular teaching? So Omar Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, he says, the local Rabbi Eliezer. He says, you know, one thing I can tell you, he says, that it's not Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. It doesn't say whose opinion it is, but it says, I know one thing, it's not Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. The Ik Rabbi Eliezer, because of Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, Omar, he says, look, what is the thought of an idolater? He wants to sacrifice to idolatry, right? Then that's what's on his mind. So that being the case, then what? Would you be able to get this animal for him if it's on the way to the temple over there, the Avodah Zarah? The answer is no. According to Rabbi Eliezer, no. Okay. All right. Yeah. And the Mishnah continues, Yotzei also. However, once the meat comes out this time, right? That's prohibited. Why? It's prohibited, of course, not just for eating, you understand, but what are we saying? We're saying it's prohibited even for a Jew to derive any benefit whatever from it. In other words, not to buy, not to sell, or anything like that, okay? That we have to understand. So, I says, why is it prohibited? He says, it's prohibited, because we said that sacrificing to idols is like sacrificing to the dead. It's what we had earlier, a few weeks ago. We had that interpretation. It's based on the verse in Tehillim, by itself to the Valpio, by Mason, that the Jews became attached to Baal Peor. This we'll be reading about when we read the story about Balak. If you remember, right, at the end of the parsha over there, how the Jews sinned and so on, and they began to worship, Peor, Baal Peor, and they ate said, sacrifices of the dead. But by the dead, it means sacrifices of idols, okay? So, and then we said at the Gemara that just as a mace, you're prohibited from having any hanor, from you're not allowed to derive any benefit whatever from the dead, then in that particular case, it's tantamount to saying that you're not allowed to have any benefit whatever from the sacrifices to Avodah Zarah as well, or Avodah Zarah in any form, okay? Yeah. So, so therefore, Vayotzi Osim Neshur Kizim Chemesim. My Talmud says, E Epsher, Telekat Tikrovas Avizkar Chovim. Because they say it's impossible, you know, once it's gone into the temple, it's impossible that it was not used as an offering to idolatry. So, money. So, maybe now we can figure out who was the author of this statement. It says, Rabbi Yehuda ben Miserai. Rabbi Yehuda ben Miserai. The Tanya learned that Rabbi Yehuda ben Miserai Omer, he says, Minayin letikrevis havidus kechovim shemitami beyohel. How do we know that a sacrifice to idolatry, it's as if it makes tame in the presence, you know, literally in the tent, but what it means is by contact with the dead. So it's the same thing. It's in other words, it's equated with contact with the dead, which is a form of tumor, our highest form of tumor. Shenemar, and then he quotes this pasuk that I quoted to you, by it's abdul peor, by yochlu zivchei besim, and ma meis betami beoil, just as a dead body causes tumor if it's covered over in the tent, literally. So aptik roivas avidus kechol mitabe beoil. So a sacrifice to idolatry has the same effect. Also, it makes tome under these circumstances. Then we learned another one. It says, Harochin the tarfos asurin b'seish v'lasis v'ahem. If the goyim are going on a pilgrimage to wherever they're going to, pilgrimage to their temple, right? Then, in that particular case, it is prohibited to do business with them. Well, yeah, that's what Moses is, right? Moses is for Moses, right?
If you give them money, they might use the money to buy something.
Of course. I mean, the idea being that, yeah, that we had earlier, though, that do business with a guy, what is he going to do? He's going to take his money, and particularly makes a profit. And he'll go and he'll praise his idol, right? He'll give thanks to his idol, praise his idol, because he made money off the Jew.
So that'd be...
Right. Yeah, all right. But as I say, right, but we had before, I mean, that it would be murder. In other words, he would give thanks in this particular case to the Avodah Zarah because he made profit from the Jew. So therefore, we want to avoid that situation, okay? Again, remember, we're not talking here about, you know, doing business with the goyish storekeeper or something like that. I mean, of today. We have to put ourselves back again in the frame of mind of what conditions were like 2,000 years ago when Jews were living among idolaters, you understand? And these things were happening, and therefore, you know, are concerned. Well, there's a difference of opinion, very strong. I mean, that in general, the opinion is that we don't consider either the Christians or the Muslims as idolaters. Muslims certainly, they don't, you know, they don't put up statues of anything, you know, in their mosque. You realize that.
What about Buddhists?
Buddhism definitely is right. Hindus even more so. Yeah.
Even more so.
No question about it. Right. Yeah.
So yet, I just read about the many, many Jewish families that go for Buddhism. As a matter of fact, there's this whole thing, I read an article only this week about how they are incorporating the Buddhist principles into Judaic ritual.
Yeah, correct. What you're saying is, right, exactly that. Some people are using this idea of Zen philosophy or something like that, right. Yeah, you have...
Of Buddhism.
Right.
Combining it with Judaism is a whole attractive move in like Los Angeles.
Yeah, among the
big,
you have it among left-wing Jews, right? It's correct. I mean, you have a group of them.
I just read about it this week.
Right? Yeah, no, it's nothing new. I mean, they've been talking about it for years now. Right? Yeah.
There was a number that 50% of all cults and strange groups in the United States are Jews.
Jews.
Unfortunately. Unfortunately.
Way back.
What are the ideas?
I would say primarily it's the idea of meditation, passivity, something along those lines.
Transcendence of they're not talking about the world to come, I don't think. I think it has more to do with peaceful soul.
Right.
They didn't read the Aryan Captain spoke in Jewish meditation.
Right.
There are some principles, certain principles of reaching this nirvana.
So that's transcendentalism. I thought that was to try to...
That takes those principles, but that's not very popular. That's not a big thing
anymore. Bring yourself out of this world to the world to come. You're saying it's just to bring yourself out of yourself?
I think it's to do with transcending the rigors and the negative influences.
Yeah, to try to seek peace or something like that.
And they're trying to replace this with
soul
and
so on.
Ethical.
Right. Okay.
So you have to have a principle of uniting the spiritual forces of the body with the overall forces. The body is a vehicle to gain the spirituality through breathing and everything else, and sharpen it. Unite them with the spiritual
forces. Okay. Let's learn for a few more minutes and then we'll call it a night, okay? Because I'm not feeling that well myself. Okay, right. Yeah, we're almost done with this page and we'll start the next page, okay? All right. So, I hope you can tell first, right? Okay, so when you see a group of idolaters going on a pilgrimage, then, as we said, Asur and Lasis from Lasis to Bahem, it's prohibited, you know, to do any business with them. Omar Shmuel, so Shmuel said, why? He explains. Oved Kechovim, he says, an idolater, Ha'urtur Tarfos, right? And he's going on a pilgrimage to his Avedah Zarah. So Ba'alicha Asur, right? It's prohibited to do any business with him while he's on his way over there. The Ozil Umode Kameh Avedah Kechovim, all right? Because he'll go and he'll give thanks to his idol. You understand? That's what I said a few minutes ago. That's the idea. And this idea we've had previously as well, right? So that's the reason why it's prohibited to do any business, because he'll be happy that he made profit off the Jew, and he'll say, it's my belief in my idol that enabled me to do it. Okay? Bahazara. Hold it. Let's see. My eyes sort of jumped down a little. That's the reason why I lost my place. Okay. So, yeah. Bahazara, if, however, he's already been there and he's on his way home, then it's okay, then you can do business with him. Because my Dahava, whatever it was, it happened, and that's all it is to it. As Rashi says, he's talking for his call about the text. But he says, "Why the Habahada?" He says, "You swear directly if the compost." Oh well, I think it's the next thing over there. All right. So then we continue. Okay. So far we talked about an idolater who is going to the temple of his idol on a pilgrimage, right? Now, how about Yisrael, Ha'olecha Tapros? The Jew goes on a pilgrimage, and here we're not talking about the pilgrimage to Yerushalayim, but we're talking about what? The Jew who goes on a pilgrimage to the idol temple.
Yeah.
So in that particular case, Ba'olicha Mutar, on his way there, you are permitted to do business with him, because you do business with him, still more Hodebergle also. Perhaps you can persuade him to turn back and not go over there. Okay? Bahazara, however, if he's already coming back from visiting the place of idolatry, then it's also cannot do any business with him. Kevin, inasmuch as, and then we come to the next page, if I can find it. Right here. What do I do with it? Oh, here we are. Right. Okay. Okay. Yeah. His arms were bad, then it's prohibited. Because Kevin, the Obik bore, Mahada, or the other. Because he is so attached, he's been taken in so much by the idolatry that he observed over there, right?
Yeah.
That guess what? He'll want to go back again. Mahada, Hada. Okay, don't want to go back again. The whole Tanya, didn't we learn? Israel, a little powerful, Ben Bahalir, Ben Bahazo, also. Didn't we learn another statement which says, another thing which says, a Jew who is going on this Tavis, on this pilgrimage to the Avodah Zarah, is prohibited to do any business with him, whether he's going or whether he's coming back, which of course contradicts what we had just at the bottom of the previous page, that said that he's going, maybe you can persuade him to come back. Right. So Omar Rashi explained, why is this guy a lost cause? He says, Kitanya Ahi, because when we had that particular statement that says, neither on his way nor coming back, we're talking about the Yisrael Mumer, a Jew who is an apostate, the Vaday also, who certainly wants to go. I mean, if he's so attracted, but there's no question, he'll go you can't dissuade it, you know, from going there. Because as we said, at the top line over here, he might go back again simply because he's so taken up.
That word, Israel
Mumor.
Mumor, and the one next one? Word?
Devada, because he certainly will be
gone. Avada, that's right, the word, right. Like Avada, Devada.
I think I shall stop at this particular point. Anyway, I covered this. I don't. Okay, we continue from where we left off last week. Tonight is the 6th of July, and in the year 2005, we are now at the top of Avet Zorah, Lamed Gimel, Amud Aleph. I just want to summarize a little bit the very last discussion that we had, because this follows. Okay, last week, at the end of our learning over there, so we had a teaching which says that Yisrael ha'helach l'tafras ba'licha muto dilbo harabei v'le'yazah b'chazor osim. Okay, say that a Jew who goes to one of these goyish pilgrimages, okay, remember? Reminds me of the days, in the days of our youth, when people would run to the midnight mass to see what's going on over there. What are they doing over there?
Christmas
Eve, right, yeah.
It's true, you know, that they used to want to go to church, as I went on the date that I went on.
Yeah.
He wanted me to go to hear the organ recital on Christmas Day.
Yeah, yeah.
And we actually got to the church and stood on the line. And all of a sudden, I said, I took him by the hand and walked away. My father ever heard that's where I was that day.
curiosity.
So to get back then, what is the situation? If a Jew goes to these tarfas, they call them, okay, these pilgrimages of the goyim, the idolaters, right? So, in that particular case, what do we say? So we say that if he's on his way over there, then in that particular case, you could still buy something from him, simply because of the fact, maybe you can get him to turn back, change his mind, and he won't go over there. But if he's already gone, and he's on his way back, then in that particular case, it says, osur, it's prohibited, Kavan, in as much as, and now we come to the top of Lamed Gimel. Okay? The Avik Bar, in as much as, obviously, if he's going to them, he has to be so fanatic about it. I mean, he's attracted so much to it, he's clinging to it. This is what Avik, okay? Avik means, okay? As Rashi says, Rosh Aniva, it's like being tied to something, okay? Like being tied to it, right. So, in that particular case, right? So we say, hada hadar azil. Okay, so in that particular case, there's no question that, you know, he's determined to go to it, and therefore, even though he's returning